So, I promised to step into to this free probability course and talk a bit about Brown measure. And the Brown measure is a measure that mimics the eigenvalue distribution of operators in or matrices, but now in two one factors instead. So it'll become usually a continuous measure and not just distributed in a finite number of points. For normal operators, it's fairly obvious how to do this, but if you go to non-normal operators, it's a bit tricky to define it. And I'll just write a few references. I should say that the Brown measure has somehow, by construction, it has nothing to do with free probability, but it turns out that the exams that one have been able to compute this measure, and they almost all come from free probability theory. Okay, so let me just give some references. It all started with a paper by Larry Brown. It appeared in 1986, but it was actually in proceedings of US-Japan conference, which was held in 83. And it's called something on Liskey's in the type 2 case. So, if I remember correctly, Liskey's theorem says something like that: if you have a trace class operator in B of 8, then the trace of that, then first of all, the set of eigenvalues you have to find a good way of counting a multiplicity of eigenvalues, but if you do that, then you will get that the sum of the absolute value of the eigenvalues is finite, namely bounded by the one norm, and the sum without absolute value is equal to the trace of the operator. And that's not in finite dimension and easy, in infinite dimension it's not so easy. So we want to generalize this theorem for that. Of course, if you want to do it in a 2-1 setting, then he will need to know what is the analog of the eigenvalue distribution. So that was his motivation. And actually, it wasn't noticed by many people before I took it up together with a student. GFA 2000. That's a long title. I cut it down to Brown spectral distribution. For R diagonal elements. In fine effect. Have you talked about R diagonal elements here? No, okay. Then there's, shortly after, there was a paper by Jan and Lena, took this up, colloquium 2001, and it's just called computation of some examples of Brown measure. And then there's a written paper by me and Hannes Schulz about bound measure and the unbounded case. I'll just short it down to go. In the unbounded case. Okay, this is not the real title, but it's something like that. Okay. And the main reason for writing this was that we needed to compute Brown measure of certain unbounded operators to deal with this invariant subspaces for even for bounded operators. We needed that as a technical tool. Okay. So what is the Brown measure in infinite. Stick to factors, and you could do it for finite phenomena, but we specified normal faithful tracial state. But of course, if you have finite factor, your trace is unique. So, and finite factors, there's only the type 1n, and there's the type 2 ones. So either it's the n by n matrices over the complex numbers, or it's a 2-1 factor. And you have, so n is such a factor, and then it has a unique trace. Tracial state, which is automatic, is normal, and also faithful. Okay. Okay, if you have a normal operator, it's easy to see what to do. So if, well, maybe I should start with self-adjoint. So if A in M and A is equal to A star, then by spectral theory you know that there exists a unique measure, probability measure, on the real line with, I'll just write this for compact support, such that trace of a to the power n is the same as integral of t to the n mu d mu a of t. No, real line. So, in other words, for self-adjoint operator, the moments of a taking this sense is the moments of unique compactly supported probability measure, and this. And the support of this measure is actually the spectrum of A. And this is now the analog of the probability distribution of the eigenvalue distribution. If you now take, what shall I call it? T in N, and assume that T is normal, then just by computing the moments, you will not be able to say, if you have a finite dimension, if it was an N by N matrix, you would not be able to recover the list of eigenvalues from the moments alone. So what you can do instead, you can simply say that your mu t, so your generalized eigenvalue distribution, is simply, well, your operator has an, normal operator has a unique spectral resolution, with a complex plane where E is a projection valued measure, and the support of this measure is simply equal to the spectrum of T. So often you can think of it as just integral over spectrum of T, and then your mu T you can then define as tau composed with this E, which now be a measure take values in sense Borel measures into positive numbers. And it's easy to see that if M is M and C, and cell C in M, C still normal, and you will have the quasi spectral theorem in the algebra that C is conjugate to a diagonal matrix with the eigenvalues of T repeated there, and if you compute this measure, you will simply get that mu T is 1 over n delta lambda 1 plus up to delta lambda n. So mass 1 over n assigned to each eigenvalue. If you have multiple eigenvalues, you should of course take multiplicity into account. Okay, in final dimension, it may be not so clear that this mess is not determined by the moments, but it's certainly obvious in infinite dimension, because if you take, for instance, you can choose what's called a high unitary U, that means that mu is a uniform distribution, it's a unitary, and its measure, provided in this sense, is the uniform distribution on the unit circle. Okay, then all the moments set in the mu set. See, just by rotation symmetry of this measure, all these will be zero, except of course for n equal to 1. So this would be 1 if so, which is the same as the moments of the Dirac measure in 0. So that means that the high unitary have the same moments as the zero operator, but it doesn't have the same eigenvalue distribution in this sense. Of course, you would say, well, you can capture this by not taking just the moments, but you have to take the mixed moments of T and T star. And that will certainly give this. Now if we go to the general case, so T in M finite factor, T in M non-normal, or at least you don't want to assume that it's non-normal. How do you mimic the eigenvalue distribution? Okay, let's take some examples. The n by n matrices. Then this unique trace, of course, becomes 1 over n times the unnormalized trace. On M and C, some of the diagonal elements. And okay, if you have your operator T, then the spectrum of T, or the set of eigenvalues, is the root of the characteristic polynomials P lambda equal to determinant lambda I minus T, and you have P lambda can then be written as a product over the roots. So where these roots are have to be repeated according to multiplicity as a root in this polynomial. It may not, in the non-normal case, it may not be the same as the eigenspace dimension of the corresponding eigenspace. So this is the set of this where there could be repetition. So the measure you want to have should be be 1 over n delta lambda 1, some of the Dirac measures in these points where you get mass. So if you have an eigenvalue with root multi k, then it actually appears to be mass k over n. Solving, just finding roots in a polynomial can be tricky, and then I'm trying to explain the ideas behind Brown's construction, and he found a way of getting from this polynomial to this measure in somehow analytic way, because if you look at the logarithm, the natural logarithm, I'll write this like this, of the characteristic polynomial, this is simply product between lambda to lambda I by logarithm of this. So this will be some logarithm of lambda minus lambda I. And then he applied the Laplacian to this. So I write it this way because I use delta for something else. So this is d2 d lambda 1 square plus d2 d lambda 2 square, where these are the real and the imaginary part of lambda. Now what happens if you take the Laplacian of this one? Okay, if you stay away from the root, you actually get zero. But let me take the case, let's look at just log lambda alone. Then we can always make a parallel translation. So if you compute it out in, if you just take computation in C outside zero, you will get that delta the Laplace square of this one, well, then you have to write it in polar coordinates, and it becomes, so your lambda is R I C theta, and then you'll get of log R instead, and then of course this one don't have to worry about, and if you take the second derivative here, you get minus R square, this one becomes plus R square, and the last one gets zero, plus zero, so this is altogether equal to zero. But if you compute it the right way, you actually get something non-zero, namely not a function, but a measure 2 pi times the Dirac measure of zero. That of course explains why it should be zero all over, except when you take this away. I'll give a physicist proof of this. So what will you do? You can think of Laplace as converging with the gradient of some, well, some function here, it looks like that. And then if you want to find the total mass of this over some area, let's say over a ball with radius zero, then you will say, well, this is thing, and well, you know, calculus good enough, you know that you can, something called it in Danish, divergence, I don't know how to translate it, divergence theorem, tells you that you can change this to integral over the boundary of the gradient of phi times the normal vector, these are really vectors, times the normal vector to the circle, outbound normal vector, and then dx or whatever you write it as. Now, if you now plug in phi equals to log lambda, then you will get this will give the integral over the boundary of this one, and the gradient of this radial symmetric function, that will simply be the outline all the way with in the same direction as n, and have length 1 over lambda after value, that means 1 over r, so it will be 1 over n in dx. So that'll be 1 over r times the length of the boundary, so that's 2 pi r, that is 2 pi. So no matter how small a ball you choose around, so you will get that the integral of this one is equal to 2 pi. Okay, so it better be 2 pi times the Dirac machine, 0. Now, of course, this is not real mathematics, it's meta-mathematics, but I mean, there's a way of making a strict sense of this, namely using taking the Laplacian in distribution sense, namely you use, say if you have two nice functions, very nice functions, Sinti function with compact support, in fact you don't need then, but just by using partial integration you will see the following identity hold should be r. Okay, I think I hear all the c as r square, so being c infinity is nothing with complex differentiation to do. It's just the partial derivatives in lambda 1 and lambda 2 exist. Then just by using partial integration, you will have this formula. So you use this to define the Laplacian in the distribution sense. Distributions are functionals in this space here. So that means, so to make sense of this means that more precisely, both in the distribution sense. And that means that if you integrate, which one should I take for what? If I integrate delta, if I put this my phi here, so that means that 2 pi delta 0 integrate psi d lambda 1 d lambda 2. Okay, this is not, if you integrate delta 0 with respect to any psi, you actually get psi of 0. So this is psi of 0, 2 pi psi of 0 should be equal to, if you put the Laplacian on the other side, that means it should be the same as integral of log lambda log s psi d lambda 1 d lambda 2 over c for psi in. And this formula can be checked by elemental means, and so that's the way, the correct way of interpreting this one. B symphony. Okay, but once we have that, we can go back to the problem of computing this one, namely, Napa square of log lambda at value was some and now I've translated it, so each of these will be 2 pi times the Dirac measure in lambda I, so this will be 2 pi so my candidate, so the measure I want to find is simply 1 divided by 2 pi n Napa square log P lambda or Napa square log determinant T minus lambda I after value. And take it after value, it doesn't matter whether I take which sign I put on here. Okay, and so if you want to generalize this to one size, then you have to generalize it. You just need to know what the absolute value of the determinant is, which is good because there's simply no analog of the determinant in 2-1 factors. But back in 52, Fuller and Kadishan discovered an analog of the absolute value of the determinant. So T is in invertible element, I write it this way, then it's easy to write up what it should be, then delta T is equal to exp of the trace of the logarithm of the absolute value of T. So this will now be an operator, positive operator whose spectrum is contained in the open positive real numbers, so the logarithm will be of that is well defined and gives a bounded operator, self-adjoint operator, so you can take the trace of that. So here you have a real number, you say x, you will get a number in spectrum positive real numbers. If it is not invertible, you have to be more careful. Well, you can think of this as the integral from 0 to infinity of log little t d mu t of little t. So this is now the measure. Now this is self-adjoint, so here we can do whatever we want. I mean, we could take the measure defined by the moment or by composing with the spectral measure of after value, that gives the same thing. And of course this latter thing makes sense also if T is not bound, because if you to make sense of this integral, you just need that either the positive part or the negative part of this function has a finite integral. So from above, you know that the positive part of this has a bounded integral. So if you take t, then delta t has to be defined this way, and this now can be minus infinity. But so the resulting result will be, the resulting number will be a non-negative real number. And if you do this for an n by n matrix, and tau is a normalized trace, then it's not hard to see what you get. Then you actually get the delta t is nothing but the nth root of the determinant, actual value of the determinant. Well, first you get this one, but since unitary have determinant have determinant of a modulus 1, this is the same as this one. Okay, so you get, well, you don't get the actual value of determinant, you get nth root of that, but that simply means that hence mu at t, which we have defined to be this sum, which was again 1 over 2 pi n, Laplacian log t minus determinant t minus lambda I. Well, if I put an nth, this 1 over n I can get rid of by putting in as an nth root in here. This is 1 over 2 pi. What I'm writing. Okay, so this is 1 over 2 pi Laplacian of log delta t minus lambda I, where this is the Kadish-Fulier determinant, or Fulier Kadish determinant. In MN of C and with a normalized trace tau. Okay, so now things look very obvious because now you have a candidate, which makes sense. So what Brown had to do, first of all, discover this connection and secondly, prove that one can make sense out of this for any operator in a 2-1 factor. And to do that, one has to talk about subharmonic functions. It can be defined in any number of real variables, but I'll just put on R square, which at a certain point you identify with C. Okay, so a function from R square into, and then one has to take minus infinity, but not necessarily, but not plus infinity. This is called subharmonic. If F is upper semi-continuous, which means that f of x is greater or equal to limb sup n going to infinity f xn when xn converts to x. And then it should have the mean value property. So which means that whenever I have a circle in the in R square with centered x, then the mean value of the function, well, this implies actually it's a measurable function, so one can make integrals, integral functions. So the mean value, and it's also up, it becomes bounded above on compact sets. So one can make sense of integrals along here, because that will act, that will always have a finite upper part, so it makes the mean value make sense as a number which is possibly minus infinity, but not plus infinity. And so the mean value's proposition is that the mean value on a boundary should be greater or equal to the function value in x, less or equal to an, now if I think of a complex number, each is a right in this way, x plus r times I to the e theta, f of that one, e theta, computed to 2 pi. Actually, it's known that if you have equality there, it means that both f and minus f is subharmonic, then the function actually is harmonic. That means that it's even a C infinity function, and satisfies the equation Laplace of f is equal to 0. Okay, it's quite easy to see that, okay, I need one more. F is not constant minus infinity. Actually, taking in the latter together with the mean value property, it actually shows that the mean value, if you just have one point where it's not minus infinity, then the mean value of all such circles here about at x will have can only be minus infinity of a set of Lebesgue measure 0. So in this way, you will actually get that f subharmonic implies that f of x is not minus infinity except for on a Lebesgue null set. And you will also, you can further use the mean value property to prove, together with the fact that it's bounded on any compact, bounded above on any compact set. See if f is locally integrable. That's necessary to define the Laplacian of it in distribution sense. I don't know how to can find this in several books on harmonic functions. I don't know who did it or written it. So if f is subharmonic, then not the square of f exists in the distribution sense. And now the square f is a Radon measure. Shall I call it mu f? And So this is the existing distribution sense, means that the integral of f now plus square of phi dx1 dx2 is equal to the integral of the measure, that means f phi with respect to the measure. Also, it's uniquely determined by this form for all phi since spin function, the compact form. the same hole, just higher dimension. Okay, new F is called the least measure for F. And you can actually come back from the measure to F itself by in case where at least when it's okay, it's called. Maybe let me just continue the theorem by saying that if this measure has compact support, I mean, it may not even be bounded, but if it's a compact support, then it's bounded. Then f of x can be written as the integral of log x minus y, if the Euclidean distance, which is the same as the numerical value of the modulus of a complex number, if you like, d nu f of y over t. Well, this will be well defined since the support is bounded. And this will now be another harmonic function, subharmonic function, which has the same Ries measure. So the difference has to be harmonic. You can write this way where H is harmonic. Okay, let me just write this for standard distance in complex plane. So what Brown did was that he showed that if T is an element in a finite factor, so the spatial state on M, then the function lambda going to log absolute value, what's it called? Cartesian Fourier determinant T minus lambda I is subharmonic. The Ries measure will have total mass 2 pi, so if you put mu T to the 1 over 2 pi Laplacian of this, then mu t is a probability measure with support mu t inside the spectral t. You can have, in a general case, you can have a strict inclusion here actually. You have this formula here without this H part, so you will get that log T. I forgot something here. I think I have to do like this. Yeah. So now I build the 1 over 2 pi into the measure, so I instead get this one, the function itself, is equal to the integral of log lambda minus z over the complex plane of d mu t of z plus something harmonic, which turns out to be zero for z. And moreover, tree characterizes mu t in the probability measures with compact support in the complex tree. Sorry, that's the other one, more lambda. Okay, I'll just push a break 5 minutes if that's okay, and then give a sketch of the proof of one actually. When he was called Sakamani. Dante's original proof was a bit convoluted, so when Fleming Larkin became a student, we made up a simpler proof, which only exists in his thesis, unfortunately, but Henry Sills and I needed this construction here, so we polished it and put it in our last paper here with suitable reference. So the idea is that you have to be careful with this Kettleson-Fuller determinant, because it's not a continuous function, not even a norm topology, but it is continuous under decreasing limits, which is not hard to see. And so you get that if t is an m, you have the delta t is actually the infimum or the decreasing limit. Limit, how do we write it? Epsilon goes to zero. Of x trace of, and then you add a little bit to the absolute value of t. So the absolute value of t is the square root of this, and take add epsilon 1 and take the square root of that. And And so you can put that 1/2, what am I writing here? Okay, so you can take, so log delta t is equal to this limit epsilon goes to zero of 1/2, or 1/2 tau of, something's missing here, log already. Okay, now you have got, this is well defined because you have an operator which spectrum start at epsilon begin, which is bigger than zero. And this is a decreasing limit. As epsilon goes down to zero. So you define put f of lambda to be the one you want to compute, namely log delta t minus lambda 1, which is, yeah, so this will be of if epsilon lambda, where if epsilon lambda is this 1/2 tau log, and then we have to take, I'll write it like T lambda star T lambda plus epsilon 1, where T lambda is equal to T minus lambda 1. And this is a decreasing limit again. And the trick is now that this function is nice. It turned out to be a C infinity function, but it's certainly a C2 function. If epsilon lambda is a C2 function. So taking the Laplacian in the distribution sense is the same as taking the Laplacian in the usual sense. What do we then get is the density of a Riesz measure. And you can compute that one be computed. Using standard prex, namely that the PDT of trace of logarithm of some function A of t, let's say t going into A of t goes to strictly positive self-adjoint operator. If this is a different Schaeffer function, then this is exactly what you expect it to be, trace of A prime of t times A inverse of t, A t inverse. And without the trace, you have an even simpler identity. You have t goes into B of t, differentiable into n alone, then you will have the DDT of B of t inverse is B of t inverse, B prime of t, B t inverse. Just knowing these two rules, you can take a little bit of time. You can sit down and compute the Laplacian in this epsilon, and you get the result that Laplacian, if epsilon lambda is equal to, I think it is 2 epsilon trace of T lambda, and then we have to take the T lambda star on the other side, plus epsilon 1 inverse T lambda star T lambda plus epsilon 1 inverse on this side. And then you just use that if A and B are positive, then trace of AB is also positive, because this is the same as trace of A 1/2 B A 1/2, which is a positive operator. So this is greater than 0. Now it needs to go the other way. If the Laplacian is greater or equal to 0, then it is subharmonic. So this implies that if epsilon is subharmonic, for epsilon greater 0, and then since if epsilon converts down to f, you can use you have to change the signs, but you use Lebesgue theorem of monotone convergence to see that the mean value property is still satisfied. So it means that f, first of all, f becomes upper semi-continuous and has and f has mean value property. And then it will actually turn out that you can prove that for large lambda, f of lambda is harmonic. You can make an expansion of f lambda that shows this easy computation. Certainly for lambda, absolute value for that. If this is greater than norm t, then you're certainly in business. So, and until, no, okay, I don't, right, let's put all this. No, I just have to show that this function is cannot be minus infinity everywhere. But of course, if lambda is outside the spectrum of C, then the Cartesian toolid is, then this is an inversible operator, and this is explicitly bigger than zero, which implies that f of lambda is not infinity. So there are lots of points where f of lambda is not infinity, and hence f is subhomology. Okay. It's time for a break. So 10 minutes, is that what you used to take? I mean, I didn't know about it before it was all over. I so just tried to think myself how he got to this,
yeah.
and certainly I gave an argument for that it was if you take a n by n matrix, it's always subharmonic.
Okay.
And so,
okay, so I just hope that it works.
Yeah.
The definition has to be
subhonic
if it's the potential of the
mesh. Yeah, that's equivalent, of course, but I mean, we don't know that a priori.
No, but
I mean,
the sense it has to be, if you can get the measure, then it has to be.
Yeah.
So that would be the Phillips proof.
No, no. It just, I mean, it goes the other way. If there exists a boundless, then this function has to be subharmonic.
It's worth checking.
Yeah.
So can you put it in a more abstract way? So when you take the log of an analytic function, you get a subharmonic.
If you take a log of the absolute value of an analytic function, yeah, but I mean that will work for finite dimensional matrices. But I mean this one is certainly very complicated. I mean since the mesh mu t can this theory certainly also contains all normal operators, and for normal operators you can prescribe any compact mesh mu t as its spectral distribution. So that means that you can get any subharmonic function which is harmonic outside a certain disk, and with some growth condition that ensures that this extra term H is vanishing. So and subharmonic function can be very complicated.
Yes, I know. But I was wondering if we have some
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all that works because I add this extra epsilon, so everything becomes into the invertible operators where the log is well defined and etc. And then can use Banach space methods. But then one has to take a limit epsilon going to zero at the end. But it comes out then out of this that I'm okay. Then you have to divide this by 2 pi. So if you take 1 over pi instead of 2, then this will actually be density for probability measures in the complex plane that converts weakly to the Brown measure.
Actually, the problem is the same for Lorentzian random projectors. The same idea is there in the Gecko.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I only learned about that afterwards, that he was using some of the same techniques.
Representing the spectral measure of a non-Hermitian and a matrix in that form, it becomes a Hermitian problem because you have T minus lambda I, T minus lambda I star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you transfer from non-Hermitian to Hermitian.
Mm-hmm.
There are some analytic things.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, you really have to watch this steps because this upper semi-continuity, so if you have operators converging, you don't, I mean, if even if you know they have a sequence of operators, but all these events converge nicely, it's not always so that the bound message converts. So I think that's also a reason that the people are somewhat doubtful about Yeku's result, because he's not very clean with this kind of limit argument. And,
So that's one problem.
That you have to show it's conversive to something.
But not only that,
it's
better
conversive,
but with a certain rate of
convergence. Mm.
So once you have that, so that's one problem.
Mm.
That you have to show it's conversive to something. And the other one is you have to show there's no very small, it doesn't law, because then the
positive
will be
T minus
lambda
I,
T minus lambda
I star.
You have to show expect some convergence to something.
Yeah.
But
that was also proved the circular law and elliptic law. Was, yeah, I don't know if there has been a rigorous proof of the elliptic law, but at least the circular law has been studied. I mean, if you take, it corresponds to these, I'll come to that in the next, if you take two, what corresponds to self-adjoint Gaussian random matrix, which independent, and then like make linear combinations like that where alpha is different from beta, then you'll get a distribution which the eigenvalue distribution will convert to uniform distribution of a certain ellipse, and that's what Gierko calls the elliptic law.
These are,
or maybe I should call them x1. So these are G I R G U E and independent. No, these are real numbers. Yeah, so you have this. I mean, if they have the same absolute value, if these are equal, you get the circular law. But if they're different, the eigenvalue distribution will, or at least the bound measure, and that will convert to uniform distribution on a certain ellipse.
I think this should be
doable.
Mm. I mean, not for just for
Dewey, but for general. Yeah. He's looking at the corresponding one where you have almost independent entries, but you have just the position, IJ position and JI position are linked in some ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have the reference in this paper by Bjarn and Lena refers to this these works of Gierko. Strong circular law, strong elliptic law.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. No, I
but it's, I mean, this is his own dream. He's probably East Chicken since accepted it.
Now we have all the techniques in place, so this is doable, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I saw recently there was an, maybe I should take this off. Okay, Brown, Brown himself proved a number of theorems about this measure. First of all, this generalization of Lipschitz's theorem, but also a Weyl inequality. Maybe I should just write that up. Which is that if T is an M, then so that's generalized. And I never remember which Y, if it's I or L. Oh, Y. Is it Y? Then the interval over spectrum of T of, oh, I think it, set to the P in UT is always equal, less or equal to, so the T-th norm of P in here, which is the trace of absolute value T to the P. I mean, this corresponding one for trace class operators in B of H was well known, that the P norm of a set of list of eigenvalues is less or equal to the second class norm of P itself. Actually, it's easy to see that just by delta is multiplicity, you have that delta of A T A inverse is equal to delta of T when A is invertible. So this will immediately give you that mu of A T A inverse is always the same as mu of T. So this bound measure is invariant on the similarity transform. And actually, Hannes Schulz and I have a sharpening of this one, namely telling the following. That's the last paper up there, that the integral of this one set to the PD mu can actually be written as the mu T is the infimum. I mean, equality is obvious from these things, A inverse P norm to the P, where A runs through the invertible elements in P. Okay, man, I could prove a lot of properties about this bound measure, but actually Brown didn't present any examples, except, I mean, the well-known, the finite dimensional ones and the normal ones. I started back what was it, 1997, I think we started to try to compute it for concrete operators. So there's these R diagonal operators, or elements, due to Nika and Spicer. Okay, the definition was given in combinatorial terms, namely that you have your T and M, then you look at the pair T comma T star, and then I'll write NS from the Nika Spicer multivariable T transform of, now then you look at the pair T and T star, and then it will now be a function in two non-commuting complex variables. I mean, this one you have some. Well, I'm not used to writing the combinatorial way. So I just learned, you may not have seen this expression written out, but certainly for, you know, it's just a polynomial. So you have some monomials will coefficients I1 and these are the cumulants, multivariable cumulants. I cannot even spell it, I'll just say it. Did I put this on again? Okay. And then they said definition that T is R diagonal if R T comma T star set 1, set 2 is of the form sum C K set 1, set 2 to the K plus set 2, set 1 to the K. K the 1 to infinity.
The definition is not clear. What is this R? Is it equality term?
Okay, I just tried to give, in a second I'll give an equivalent definition which can be understood in non-cumulant. Just if you had in this class had seen these cumulants, I mean then the...
Maybe just, I mean in terms of precumulants, it means if you consider cumulants where the entries are T or T star, only those cumulants where T and T star are alternating are different from zero, all the others are zero.
Okay, so T is R diagonal. Everything goes in a trivial situation for me. So I mean, finite factor. Tau is a unique trivial state on M. And T. Then this is R diagonal if T has the same star distribution as UH, where U is a high unitary and H is a positive self-adjoint. Okay, positive. And U comma H are star free. So you may have to go to some other finite phenomena to find these two. But in most cases you don't have, namely if the null space of the kernel of T is zero, then T is equal to polar decomposition with U unitary, and then T is R diagonal if this U is R unitary and the pair U comma T bar after really is star free. So in those cases, you could just think it this way. Only if you're kernel zero, you may have to go to a different algebra. Okay, a particular case of such R dimension. So high unitaries are R diagonal. It's obvious that just corresponds to that H is the scalar operator constant 1, which is star free from anything. and Voiculescu's circular operator. The first proof given of that was by Voiculescu, and was made by the random matrix model for a circular operator. But I think your combinatorial machine will give this without random matrix. Yeah, to fit into this. Okay, so did I tell what Voiculescu circular operator is? No. So if you take this would be a free circular system, semicircular system. So this would be free. It's understood that it should be free, but let me put it for. It should be free, and S1, this should be self-adjoint, and mu SI, this spectral distribution measure, was not. This given by moments, it's also a bound measure, but it doesn't matter. Is equal to 1 over 2 pi square root, the standard semicircular distribution. So if you have this, then you put C equal to 1 over square root 2. Dx equal to 1 over square S1 plus I S2. Then this is Voiculescu circle, the circle operator. And it has a random matrix model where you have independent Gaussian entries, n square independent Gaussian entries. Okay, so in fact, we're particularly interested in this case because it was known by a classical result of Ginepa and Dyson that if you look at the corresponding random matrix model, then the eigenvalue distribution will converge to the uniform distribution on a unit circle. So we wanted to compute the bound measure of this and see if we really got that distribution. Okay. So the main result in this paper with Fleming Larsen is possible. For simplicity, I'll say that the kernel is zero. We covered that case also where it was non-zero, but it's not much more complicated. And that this one and one condition more, T star T, is not a constant operator. Multiple of the unit. So, meaning that T is not a multiple of a high unitary. Of course, in a high unitary case, it's obvious how to compute it because the operator is normal. Okay, then. First of all, the support of the Brown measure of T is equal to this analysis okay, because T2 norm is just tau T star T to 1/2, and that's the bounded number. T inverse exists as an unbounded operator because of this, but it could line and two. So this is zero if T inverse is not in L2. I mean, the LP spaces can be realized as a space of unbounded operators. Okay, first one. Sup, not mu t here. Mu t is in van under rotations. That's going to gamma z. Gamma value is equal to 1. That's quite obvious. And one thing more, that 3 mu t of the Bohr, okay, it has no atoms actually, so it doesn't matter what if I take closed or open, well, actually the radial part has no atoms, so there's no circle central and zero that have positive measure, so it doesn't matter if I specify open or closed balls here. So maybe I should put it this way. Open ball of this is equal to T for R equal to 1 divided by the square root of the S transform of mu T star T of T minus 1. Okay, the one have to make put the fourth condition, namely 1, 2, and 3, determines mu t uniquely, and the reason is that if one let t vary from 0 to 1, this number r will vary. Go through the open interval here. Because R going to, no, T going to maps 0 to 1 onto the open interval from, it takes improving to do this, but that's correct. Of course, when it's rotational symmetric, you just have to know what the image measure is on the taken absolute value, and that's again determined if you know what the measure is on open or closed interval starting at 0. So if you just know the measure on all balls, you're done. And here you know for all balls with radius in the interesting part, namely where the radius will in this analysis of the support. Okay, so just say a little about the proof. The main observation is somehow that you prove that if you take, so you take a complex lambda and then you, let's put alpha equals the absolute value of lambda, then you consider the measure of t, and you want to know how to get from this measure to the measure of T minus lambda I. Of course, it's not clear that there's a way of coming from this. Well, okay, yeah, this measure will actually determine the start distribution of an archaeological element, and therefore it determines everything. But the point is to get from here to there. There's a fairly simple procedure. You define for a measure, you take the symmetric part, so let's say mu tilde should be 1/2 mu plus, what should I call it, sigma. Sigma and probability, which means that I distribute the mass of the measure symmetrically around zero. So in particular, what it turns out is that if you do it like this, and if you take the symmetrized measure of this one, so that will be, have this, on the positive real line, it will have half this mass, and then the other half is the mirror image. Then this one can be obtained from the corresponding symmetrized version of T absolute value by adding a Bernoulli distribution delta alpha plus delta minus alpha. So once you approve this, then you have at least an algorithm to find this one. You will know that the R transform of, and then the one-dimensional R transform, okay, which is not the same as in the Nikisch-Spicer R transform if you restrict to one variable, and the factor seven difference. This is the good old one, avoid this. This will tell you that this one is equal to the R transform of this one, Z plus something computable. I think it's square root 1 plus 4 alpha square Z square minus 1 over 2Z, something like that. And then you use that that d lambda set, which is the tilde transform or Cauchy transform. Lambda is Cauchy transform or tilde transform. Then you know that d inverse hat of mu z is the same as mu of z plus 1 over z. So at least if you know the distribution of T, you know the R transform here, you can find the R transform here, and then you can go back and find the distribution of the measure here by the inverse transform. And once you know the measure, you are actually able to, in principle, then you are, in principle, able to compute the Cartesian-Fuller determinant. So, mu t determines mu. Well, then you go back and find the non-symmetric measure, of course. So this one determines this one by known methods, and which determines the Cartesian-Fuller determinant of this one, or log of this one, which is just the integral of log t mu t minus lambda. Okay, so there's an algorithm to do things, but of course it's not clear that you can compute things in a way that you can express it in a simple form, but it turned out to be so, and that's the result. So let me see what it gives in the circular case. Then you have then also Voiculescu computed, this is first of all R diagonal, he also computed the absolute value of that mu s, mu c. This is half semicircular, so this is what would it be? 1 over pi square root 4 minus x square integral from 0 to 2 of x dx. And so one can compute mu c star c, which is mu of this one, simply by finding the push forward measure or image measure of mu c by c goes to t square. And this is standard computation, 1 over 2 pi square root 4 minus x, x d integral from 0 to 4, x dx. And this is also what's called the free Poisson, the parameter 1, form parameter 1. Okay, so, and the art from that is to compute simply of z is equal to 1 over 1 minus 6. If one have form parameter lambda, it will be lambda divided by 1 minus 6. Okay, S transform. Okay, one can of course also for a distribution find the S transform, and this turns out to be S of z 1 divided by 1 plus S. There's actually a simple way of seeing this, because it turns out that set R set and what do I call it? W, maybe I should call it W, yeah. And W goes to W S of set R inverse of each other. Okay, so that's a simple observation that we made in this paper up there. I think it's easy to prove once you know what you have to look for. And having that, it's obvious that z divided by 1 minus z is in inverse of w divided by 1 plus w. Okay, so we have the S transform, and then we plug it into the main formula up there. First of all, you have to see what is your C2 norm that you can compute from the distribution, that is 1. C inverse 2 norm becomes plus infinity. You have to integrate, what will it be, t minus 2 respect to the density. So that will certainly be plus infinity. So support of the bound measure is the closed unit disk. And then you have to you have the S transform, so you have that for R equal to 1 over square root S mu T star T of T minus 1, so this is 1 divided by, that would be 1 over T 1 plus T minus 1. So that's a complicated way of, well, I need the square root, 1 over square root t. One has that mu t of this ball of radius r is equal to t. So this was square root t. So in another way, mu t of the ball of radius r is r square, for R between 0 and 1. And it's easy to see that there's actually only one rotation symmetry in Van Ohm's rotation in Van measure that satisfies this, namely mu t is 1 over pi times the Beck measure, d lambda 1, d lambda 2, on the disk, and it's 0 outside. So that fit with the circular law, but it doesn't give a proof of the circular law for random matrices. Elliptic operators, and that was done both by, actually first by Fleming Larsen in his PhD thesis, but never published, and then done in a different way, perhaps more elegant than by Bian and Lena. And so what you're looking at is you have S1 and S2 again, a free semicircular system. And then you look at operators of the form, so we call them C is equal to alpha S1 plus I alpha S2, beta, where alpha and beta are positive elements. And of course, if alpha is equal to beta, you just get a circular operator, possibly times some constant. So, but you can, of course, if you can determine this one up for some constant time t, you're done. So you normalize such that alpha squared plus beta squared is equal to 1, and so you can write it as t is cosine theta is 1 plus sine theta I sine theta is 2, where theta is between 0 and pi over 2. And theta equals to pi over 4 gives circular. And the limit case is theta going to 0 gives a semicircular 1, and theta going to pi over 2 will give I times a semicircular 1. So you will get something concentrated on the real line or on the imaginary line in these two cases. So Bian did some ad hoc computation. Bian and Lena did something fairly general for what happened when you add a circular operator. And somehow say alpha is bigger than 0, you can look at this as something known, namely a semicircular plus adding a circular, which is star free from that. And got it that way. But the final result is that the spectrum of this, I forgot to say, the spectrum of a circular element is a disk here. In general, you'll get, I could put that up here, for the R diagonal operators, that the spectrum of T is almost is equal to support of mu T when T inverse 2 is finite, or T inverse operator norm is, what am I saying? No, the other way around. I mean, the only case that goes wrong is when, how is it? I think I was saying worse. I mean, what happened is that you have this analysis Okay, if this becomes, if the inner ring is in here, you get a, hold this, a T inverse 2 norm equal to infinite implies that speckle T is equal to super mu T. And the same if T inverse is operator norm is finite, you also get this. Otherwise, sigma T is the full disk, is the T norm. So that's one way of finding the spectrum. You can also do it that way. Okay. But now, elliptics, these ones are, they are not r diagonal when theta is different. So we cannot rely on the other result. Nevertheless, it's possible to compute what the spectrum is. Lambda 1 squared divided by 1 plus gamma squared. The spectrum is this ellipse, and I have to say what gamma is. Cosine 2 theta. And Brown measure mu t is uniform distribution, meaning constant density on this ellipse. With density be 1 over pi, and then we have time 1 plus gamma times 1 minus gamma, so 1 minus gamma square. Okay, of course one could try to make guesses before one starts with the computation and say, well, this fits fine, because if you project this down on this distribution down on the first coordinate, then you get a semicircular distribution with a certain variance, and if you project on the other one, you get a semicircular distribution with a different variance corresponding to that you have here, two semicircular variables with each variance. But actually, if you do the exact computation, you find out that these marginal meshes are not the distribution of S1 S2. You get a different variance. So there's no easy way of getting it.
Here, what one can do is this is the circular plus the semicircular. Right? I mean, if you can get it as a circular plus the semicircular.
Yeah, that's true.
And then again, you will get
Well, I mean, Bjarne and Lena had some very delicate way of reducing that. Somehow they could dig out of our theorem, they could dig out what happens in if you take a general operator plus a circle element.
Yeah.
So, okay, it's about time. So I'll just say one thing about this, more thing about this paper of Bjarne and Lena. I mean, they have some real nice pictures in here. I mean, of course, they are followed by rigorous computations. What they're looking at is, for instance, something like you look at the free product of set 2 and set infinity, and then you take, well, they call it a U2 and U infinity. This just stands for the generators. And then they look at the operator U2 plus U infinity in L of set 2. Star set infinity, which is of course sitting in L of set 2 free product L of infinity. This is just one example we find, and of course this generator has spectrum 1 and minus 1, so spectrum U2 is plus 1 minus 1, spectrum U infinity is the whole circle, it's actually high unitary one, and then they found both the spectrum and the Brown measure of this one, they coincide, and they have some nice drawing. It looks like this one, so you have one and minus one here, so it's not just adding the circle to these two points. There's some kind of attraction there, so they meet in this point, and then they have some complicated density, which is a bit more denser near the boundary here than it is in here.
Curve is a
lemniscate? I didn't know. I mean, the angle doesn't look like a right angle, or they have made a bad scaling. I don't know. I don't know if you can see. No, they have actually made some. The other one is what's called Bacon. They make a random matrix model for this one and put it into a computer with how much this is, 150 times 150 matrix. Okay, I will stop here.